Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, happy Saturday, or in this case, Catterday.
Today we are revisiting an episode from 2013 that covers a topic near and dear to both of our hearts, which is kitties.
More specifically, it's actually about how cats came to be domesticated and live as companions to humans.
I will note that we have a couple of mentions in Unearthed about new developments that happened since this episode came out in 2013, so those will not be in here. But feel free to enjoy this show with the pet of your choice, or no pet if you are not into them.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I feel like we should both confess up front on this one that we both have cats.
We do.
But we also love dogs. Whoops.
It's not that I don't love dogs. It's that I prefer cats.
Oh, I like them both quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't have dogs.
Well, I think part of it is that when I was growing up, my mother had Cocker Spaniels.
Uh-huh.
Cocker Spaniels are crazy.
Some of them.
And we had Cocker Spaniels that bit.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't create a good association.
They were crazy. So the dogs that I had around all the time as a child were these like high-strung, neurotic Cocker Spaniels.
Aww.
That in some cases bit.
I grew up with dogs as well. My mm-hmm. parents bred hunting dogs and a variety of other animals. But I have cats as an adult. And what is really fascinating to me is the history of cat domestication, because it is so different from any other animal we've domesticated.
Yeah. I didn't know this until today.
It's really pretty interesting, and genetically it's fascinating. So just for a little bit of context on the state of cats in the world, 1/3 of American households have cats, which is quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read a statistic previously, but I couldn't find it to back this up. But I recall at one point in recent years, someone saying that the number of cats kept as pets has actually surpassed dogs in the United States recently.
Hmm.
And it's mostly because of people like me and you that have more than one.
Right.
Whereas often people will just have one dog.
Well, and I was kind of wondering about the trend of people not wanting to buy homes and living in apartments. And often it is easier to keep a cat in an apartment than a dog.
That's true. Sometimes you don't have to pay a fee to keep a cat, but you do for a dog. In an apartment. Like, there will be an additional rider. So that makes
mm-hmm.
sense. There are an estimated 600 million cats living with humans around the world. And another estimated 600 million living independent of people.
like that are either feral or fairly tame, but like street cats that just kind of do their thing on their own.
What we call strays.
Yeah. And because cats are independent and they're predators, I mean, we've all seen cats stalk their prey. They kind of get vilified a little bit in some cultures.
Well, and it's not just that they're predators. It's that often they play with their prey
in
a way that seems cruel to people.
Yeah. It does seem evil if you've ever seen a cat kind of play with a thing that is trying to get away from it.
Right.
And so as a consequence, they've been portrayed as, you know, the familiars of supervillains, and they have been associated with devils and sorcery. But overall, they still have a pretty okay standing. Cats are divided into three genera. There are the great cats, which are lions, tigers, leopards, jaguars. Cheetahs get their own. And then small cats.
All house cats belong in the Felis catus genus. The largest cat in this group is the puma at 100 to 130 pounds, or 45 to 59 kilograms. And the smallest is the black-footed cat of the Kalahari Desert in southern Africa, which is between 2.5 and 4.5 pounds, or 1 to 2 kilograms.
If you Google those things, they are the cutest cats you've ever seen.
They're teeny.
And they look a lot like the cats we would keep in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. So we're focusing today on that third group and how members of Felis catus became domesticated.
For a long time, it's been believed that the ancient Egyptians were the first people to domesticate cats. There's certainly lots of evidence that the ancient Egyptians loved cats, but the belief that that's where they came from has shifted a little bit thanks to more recent genetic studies.
The earliest artistic representations of cats that we found have been in ancient Egypt, on Crete, in Cyprus, and in some areas of the Orient. And there are also cat statues in some of the ancient art of India.
In 1983, an 8,000-year-old feline jawbone was found on the island of Cyprus, a site 1,500 years earlier than that was discovered on Cyprus in 2004, where a cat had been buried with a human.
And it was very clearly like that they had been buried together.
Right.
Not that he happened to be adjacent. And since Cyprus is an island and wild cats would be very difficult to travel with on a boat, it stands to reason that cats were actually domesticated before they got there, as they are not believed to be a native species to Cyprus.
So people would have gotten the cats to be more manageable and then taken them with a boat to Cyprus because
yes.
There were not already cats on Cyprus.
Correct.
That's how that boils down.
So Carlos A. Driscoll, who is an Oxford scholar that we'll talk about a lot more shortly because he's done a lot of work in the area of cat genetics and their history, he has stated the following on this. Quote, "The going hypothesis is that cats were brought there," meaning to Cyprus, "very early on in the domestication process by Phoenician traders and settlers directly from the Phoenician home around Lebanon, not from Egypt, as were British cats by Rome. That fact makes the island cats very interesting as they may represent a sort of proto-domestic cat." So as you said, tame enough that they could be handled, managed, and put on a ship with people. If you've ever tried to handle a feral cat, you know it's super tricky. So they really would have to be
at least kind of used to people.
Yeah.
Especially because then you're getting in a boat.
Yeah. And what makes the domestication of cats unique is that they likely chose to live with humans. They saw a benefit to themselves, and so they kind of moved into human culture rather than being identified as human by humans as a potential beneficial animal and then being caught and domesticated.
And if you're a cat person, this probably does not surprise you one bit.
Even if you're not a cat.
The cats were like, hey, I live here now.
Yeah.
And the people were like, okay.
Yeah.
So the human culture shift from being hunter-gatherers to a more agricultural lifestyle started the domestication of animals. The earliest motive for breeding animals was as a food source, but that was not...
Cats don't really do that.
No, they are not really made to be food. They're very small, but they're great in vermin management. So they naturally assumed that role as agricultural societies developed.
So yeah, basically granaries meant that cats were moving in to hunt rodents.
Yeah.
And it's believed that cats were probably really welcomed by the early farmers for this helpful service. And this actually may be how Egypt came to really revere the cat. Like they recognized that of their own volition, cats were just coming in and doing this thing that society really needed.
Yeah.
And so that was part of their growth as a very respected and loved animal.
Keeping the rats out of the grain.
Yeah. And some evidence actually suggests that the Ethiopians were the ones that brought cats into Egypt after they conquered the Nubians, which is a whole other area of history that I would like to do more podcasts on.
As we know, the artistic representation of cats in Egypt are not all about their use as the rodent police. Cats are depicted as part of family life, and they're pampered and even adorned with jewels. The penalty for killing a cat in ancient Egypt was death. There have even been discoveries of special cat cemeteries in Egypt. And lastly, the Egyptian protector goddess Bastet is a woman with the head of a cat.
As an interesting side note, the Egyptian word for cat is mao, and there's actually a breed that's recognized globally in cat shows called an Egyptian mao, but it's basically just saying it's an Egyptian cat, which I think is funny. And they're lovely cats.
The exact point of the transition from wild to domesticated in Egypt can't really be pinpointed with accuracy. Logic tells us that it would have been a gradual process, with each generation of cats living alongside people becoming more and more tame.
And there's also a theory that breeding really began around this time with cats, so that they kind of forked the cat population. They were breeding the wilder cats and the more predatory cats as their hunters to keep policing for rodents in the grain. And then they were also probably breeding the more docile cats together to create house cats. That would be, you know, part of their family and their households.
And maybe also keeping the rodents out of the inside.
Yeah, that's always a benefit. But they probably were bred to be cuddly.
Yeah, as a side note, my cats have mostly been rescues. Mm-hmm. And I remember specifically, you know, because this whole idea of cats being good at handling rodents is so prevalent that I have often had to sign a thing saying that I'm not getting this cat to be a mouser.
Yeah.
I'm getting this cat to be a companion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not uncommon with rescue groups. Because most rescues want you to be adopting it as a family member and not as a worker.
Right.
So we know that by 2000 BCE, cats were semi-domesticated, but by 1000 BCE, cats, particularly in Egypt, were considered fully domesticated. They were accustomed to being around humans, and humans had a pretty friendly relationship with them.
Yeah.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step, and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So although cats were domesticated centuries ago, the idea of a pedigree is still pretty young. That probably started in England sometime in the mid to late 19th century. Queen Victoria owned two blue Persians, which is believed to be one of the things that gave the cat a reputation for being a perfectly respectable pet.
And the first cat show took place in London in 1871, and England's National Cat Club was actually founded in 1884.
The first pedigree records in the United States were for Maine coon cats in the mid-1800s. This breed is still one of the most popular in America.
It is. They're beautiful. But even with the popularity of pedigree cats, it's estimated that less than 10% of cats in American households are purebred, compared to more than 50% of dogs in American households. So, I mean, most people that you know that have cats, they're just cats.
It's a domestic
short
hair. They're
just mixed cats. Yeah, they get listed in your vet records as domestic short hair because they usually are just mixes. Different cities are trying to control their feral populations different ways, but a lot of times rescue groups will scoop them up and socialize them and adopt them out. So there really isn't any knowledge of their lineage and where they came from.
So how did we get from wild animals to fluffy lap friends all over the world?
Well, this is interesting. From a genetic standpoint, we have had sort of a startling revelation about it. It's really hard to track where cats entered human homes and culture versus where wild cats are, because the skeletons of small wild cats and our domestic cats are virtually identical. They're really hard to tell apart. So you can't really contextualize, like, if you find a cat in ruins, it could have wandered in later, it could have been part of the thing, we don't know, it looks like a wild cat, well, they all look the same, so you can't really do that. And even DNA testing is not always conclusive, because all cats have really similar genetics.
There are 37 species in the family Felidae. That's everything from a pet cat to lions, tigers, ocelots, who are my favorite wild cat, etc. Every domestic cat is a descendant of the wildcat species.
And there are 5 subspecies of wild cats, and some of those are almost completely indistinguishable from, you know, your non-pedigreed pet cats. And this is not a situation where the domestic cats have gotten free and reverted to becoming feral, or they've, you know, become strays, or they've just wandered off. The actual wild breeds are so genetically similar to house cats that many people could not distinguish on visual alone. You will see wild cats that look just like a cat your friend has.
Stephen J. O'Brien, a molecular geneticist at the National Cancer Institute's laboratory in Frederick, Maryland, was working with Carlos Driscoll, who's a graduate student at the University of Oxford, and David McDonald, an Oxford zoologist, and others. Together, they conducted a study in 2007 in which they took blood and tissue samples from all kinds of cats, from the purebred house cats to non-pedigreed house cats to feral cats, and each of the five subspecies of wildcats to compare their DNA.
And they took those from all over the world. And a Washington Post article about the study stated, quote, "The findings, drawn from an analysis of nearly 1,000 cats around the world, suggested that the ancestors of today's tabbies, Persians, and Siamese wandered into Near Eastern settlements at the dawn of agriculture. They were looking for food, not friendship."
The researchers found that domesticated cats all over the world most closely resemble the Libica subspecies that comes from the Near East. This is significant because it shows that it's not a case of any given region simply taming their local wildcats. The other wildcat subspecies are in sub-Saharan Africa, China, Central Asia, and Europe. But domestic cats in Asia, for example, are still most closely related to wildcats from the Fertile Crescent, rather than from the Chinese or Central Asian subspecies.
So that's pretty interesting to know that somehow those cats that started in, you know, kind of the cradle of civilization are the cats that really populated the world. They weren't just regionally adapting.
Right.
They were getting sent around and spreading with agriculture. So other domesticated animals like cattle, pigs, horses, etc., all have more diverse genetic profiles. So they were being bred and domesticated in multiple different places, but it seems like the domestic cat seems to have come almost entirely from the Near East, which is really startling to think about. You know, we have this animal that is seen all over the world. Every city, every town has cats in it, but they all trace back to this one place versus
their local wild population of cats.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million. Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Evolutionary biologist at the University of California in Los Angeles, Robert Wayne, told the Washington Post that, quote, when the technology, which means agriculture, development, grain storage, etc., was transferred to other cultures, so were the cats. So he's suggesting that as cultures taught one another about how to raise grain and store it, they were also including cats as part of that package. It's like saying, okay, here's the best way to do this and the best way to store this, and you're going to want some cats. We have some for you. So that they were spreading culturally with knowledge.
I love that. It's like passing on your heirloom tomato seeds, except with a living, breathing responsibility.
Yeah. Carlos Driscoll, who we mentioned earlier, and his team have planned to follow up their 2007 study with an additional study to verify or disprove this concept. But I haven't found any published stuff that deals with it yet.
Also of note on the 2007 study is that there was genetic evidence of domesticated and wildcat hybrids. Wild and non-wild cats are so closely related that they can easily mix. So even though Felis libica is the closest relative of all domestic cats, breeding with other subspecies has led to the development of different breeds.
So, for example, members of the group Felis libica, which is usually a leaner, lither cat adapted to desert living, are believed to have mated with Felis silvestris, which is a stockier subspecies that's common in Western and Central Europe, to have created kind of the cobbier breeds that have since been refined through pedigree breeding, like a British Shorthair or a Manx or a Chartreux. If you look at any of those show cats, you know, purebred show cats, they're thicker and heavier and they don't look the same as, kind of the leaner, like an Abyssinian or any of the kind of lithe breeds. They have like a little bit of a huskier appearance. Yeah. So there was some mixing going on. And it's actually, this is a little bit of a side note, believed that cats were first brought to Britain, which probably catalyzed some of that breeding, by the Romans around 10 CE. And so that's when this crossbreeding started to happen and different species that we eventually turned into purebred, I'm using the air quotes, pedigreed cats, all catalyzed right there.
Yeah. Various mutations and crossbreedings have occurred that give us the assortment of pedigreed cat breeds that there are today. So Siamese cats and Burmese are the result of an albino series mutation. Rex breeds have a curly hair mutation. The hairless sphinx and the ear mutation of the Scottish fold and the American curl, all of these come from breeding and mutation.
Yeah, and if you ever want like a fascinating walk down like breed specifics and mutations that have purposely been retained through breeding, go to a cat show. It's one of my favorite things. I do at least one every year because I think people that have never been to one and they've only been around like, you know, your regular house cat, they're a little bit blown away by how different all of these cats sort of look and how they've been.
And how they behave.
Yeah.
A lot of them have deeply different behaviors.
Yeah, but it all started in the same place, which is, and genetically, they are all so close. I mean, they're tiny little changes in their genetic code that create all of these very different looking breeds, but at their base, they're really all very, very close genetically.
Yeah.
And it all came from the Fertile Crescent.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite historical cat?
Mm.
That's tricky. You hear a lot more about people's dogs in history than cats.
Do.
Because often, you know, dogs are out with people riding in cars and saving the day. Cats are at home by the fire.
Well, I was even startled to learn that Queen Victoria had cats.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of a Queen Victoria nerd, but you always hear about her and her dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And this, doing research for this is actually the first time I heard about her cats.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, they had cats too? But I don't think I have a favorite historical.
I have a favorite from recent history.
Yeah.
Which is Coco's kitten, Allball.
Oh, yeah. Who was a Manx?
Yeah. And that was, they wondered if the reason that Coco the gorilla picked a Manx for a cat is because that kitty had no tail.
Yeah. So if you don't know about the Manx breed, they can have all lengths of tails, but the breed ideal is to have no tail.
Mm-hmm.
So they do look kind of like little balls. The breed standard, if you go to a show, one of the things that they're looking for is that the cat could be drawn entirely with a series of circles. Like you want all round shapes about its body.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that Coco identified it as a ball, which is very sweet.
It's a sad story.
Way to bring the room down, Tracy.
I know. Well, we'll bring it up with a little public service announcement.
Please spay and neuter your pets.
Please do.
It's super important to me. Super important to, you know, we don't need more stray animals. There are plenty of stray cats in the world.
That being pretty much all of the cats I have ever had in my life have either been rescues or strays that were taken in.
Yep, mine are all rescues.
They would have become strays had I not taken them in.
Yep. Yep, I'm a big fan of adopting rescues, although I am always wowed and, like I said, blown away by the interesting shapes and beauty and behaviors of any of the purebred cats. So, but spay and neuter your pets. It's important.
Yes.
Take care of them. It's good for their health.
Thank you so much for joining us for this Saturday Classic. Since this is out of the archive, if you heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar during the course of the show, that may be obsolete now. So here is our current contact information. We are at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, and then we're at Missed in History all over social media. That is our name on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, and Instagram. Thanks again for listening.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.